This is Mal Ressler at KABU Radio, and in this next segment of the Wednesday Radio Zine, we'll be talking about this upcoming Veg Fest 2006, and that is coming up this Saturday, the 18th, at the First Unitarian Church, and just about all of this program will be dedicated to the events there and to the speakers there. But for the next few minutes, I'm going to be mentioning about what many people have run across in the news, and that is of another case of mad cow disease has, we should say the Department of Agriculture has announced the third case, came out this Monday, on the 13th of March, and what it is it was in the state of Alabama. And the report says that this cow did not enter the food supply for people or animals. And, of course, this was the third in 3 years. But at the moment, the investigators are working to find out where the cow was born and raised. So at this moment, they do not know of the other cows that were born at the same time and where they are at and what happened to them. One vet estimates that this cow is 10 years, which sounds like an interesting figure, as the ban on feeding cows goes back to 1997. So this cow presumably was born just before that ban. But for the testing of mad cow disease, just over 650,000 of the 95 million cattle have been tested. This is less than 1% of the total cattle in this country. So this is a very low figure of the amount of cattle that we have in this country. But here's a bit of news that many people do not know about. And this is one of the mad cow detective. This is one of Janet Scarbeck, and she was a person who discovered cases of CJD, and CJD is the human equivalent of mad cow disease. And what Janet Scarbeck found was when her friend died of CJD in the year 2000, this was at near a racetrack in New Jersey. It was the Garden State Racetrack in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And what happened was Janet eventually found 17 people who died of CJD and had links to this racetrack. And this report came out of the Canadian Broadcasting Company's program, The Nature of Things, hosted by David Suzuki. So there are at least 17 cases in the United States of CJD, and no news that I know of has been announced in the U.S. about this. But the CBC, interestingly, did something like this. So this is another case where your government and sometimes your news in the states do not carry some of the what I think is some of the important news that we are hearing about. So the thought of just three cows having mad cow disease may be suspect, and that's what I'm putting out there. For this program, we have the content of Veg Fest 2006. This is a conference and virtually a whole day-long festival coming in town. And I have with me one of the speakers of this conference, George Eisman. So welcome to this program, George.
Thank you, Mel. Glad to be in Portland.
And you were going to be speaking this Saturday, and what is your topic that you'll be covering?
Well, I'll actually be speaking twice. I'm going to talk about the basics of nutrition that everyone should know, and especially anyone considering vegetarian eating or vegan eating. It's important to understand that this is a much healthier way to eat but it's also something that puts some responsibility on the individual to know a little bit about nutrition, which most Americans don't know very much about. There is sort of a conspiracy of silence in this country to keep people fairly ignorant about nutrition so that the food industry can sell them any and everything, and the diet book industry can sell them every diet that they can think of, and then the pharmaceutical industry can sell them every drug to cure their ills when they have diet-related diseases, which are 7 out of the 10 leading causes of death in this country diet-related. But all we hear about is maybe, you know, cutting down on smoking. But the relationship between meat eating and also especially dairy foods, milk and cheese and so on, the relationship of those foods to cancer and heart disease is every bit as strong as the relationship between smoking and lung cancer. And yet you don't hear a lot about it because the food industry, like you talking about mad cow disease, things get suppressed. Facts that are out there get suppressed. And people just generally are confused about what's the right thing to eat, and they think everything is good for them in moderation. And the truth of the matter is, our idea of what moderation is totally skewed by what the food industry wants to sell us.
Right. And what you're mentioning about is perhaps we do know a lot, but a lot of it is either, say, food industry hype or just misinformation that we're throwing around at us. And so we can't rely on, you know, company slogans and stuff like that.
Right. I talk a lot about the work of a woman named Dr. Jane Plant, who is one of the top scientists in England. As a matter of fact, she's the chief scientist for the British Geological Survey. And she contracted breast cancer in 1987 after 5 operations and a lot of treatments. She was given only 6 months to live, and she's decided to spend those last 6 months researching why she might have gotten this disease. And what she came up with was that dairy products, as well as the beef from dairy cows, which is a lot of the cheap hamburger we get in this country and in England, is probably the most feared factor as far as raising breast cancer risk. But she didn't hear too much about it, and she was drinking skim milk and eating lean beef and thinking she was doing the right thing. And when she started doing the research, she found that as far back as 1970, there was a study in England that found low death rates for breast cancer where dairy product consumption was low, even if the intake of other fats was high. And in this country, we just came out with a study a few weeks ago saying that a low-fat diet doesn't help prevent breast cancer. Well, we've known that for 36 years, that it isn't the fat, it's the dairy product consumption that leads to breast cancer. And this woman gave up dairy products as well as meat for several weeks, and within months, her cancer was totally gone. And now, 15 years later, she's still writing books. She's written a book about osteoporosis, because people would say to her, well, if I stop eating dairy products, aren't my bones going to fall apart and get this disease called osteoporosis? And she researched that and found that not only don't dairy products prevent osteoporosis, they actually contribute to the cause of it by providing too much protein, which actually washes calcium out of the bones. So she now has a book out on prostate cancer showing that prostate cancer in men, which is on the rise tremendously just as breast cancer is also linked to dairy product consumption. The men in this country that eat the most dairy products have a 3 times higher risk of getting prostate cancer than the men that eat the least amount of dairy products. And cheese is the worst. Men that eat the most cheese have a 90% higher risk of getting testicular cancer than the men that eat the least amount of cheese. So these foods that we're being told are good for us, not only aren't they good for us, but they're totally unnecessary in our diet. And that's the hump people can't get over, because the dairy industry spends so much money trying to make us believe that we have to have these foods in our diet every day, and that somehow, you know, we'll be sick if we don't have them, whereas just the opposite is true. We don't need them, and we're going to be much higher risk of getting these cancers and heart disease if we do include them in our diet. Right. The average American consumes about 40% of their calories now from dairy products, which is way, way too much.
Which that seems to be like over one meal a day is just dairy. But, you know, I mentioned about slogans and company lines, and, you know, I could already come up with milk, you know, it does a body good. Right. Now, that might not be true, but it's been forced into our heads, and it's almost like if you repeat it enough, you'll pick up on it. Right. But I wanted to get back with one of the things you said, and as it turns out, in country studies, everywhere where there's a high incidence of prostate cancer, there's also a correlating high incidence of breast cancer. Right. And it seems to be true worldwide. And the opposite is true, too. You know, a low case of breast cancer also in that same country always has a low incidence of prostate cancer. So it seems that this ailment comes in tandem wherever it is.
Right. It's these there are growth hormones that are in, especially in dairy products and also in meat, that target hormones, glands that produce hormones. And in men, it's the prostate. In women, it's the breast, that where the most of these sex hormones are produced. And what's interesting is people think, well, maybe it's something in the genetics. But when people from these countries move to countries where they do consume more animal products, especially more dairy products, then their cancer rates go up just like the host country. Within two or three generations, they're the same. So in China, the breast and prostate cancer rates are very low. Chinese Americans have pretty much the same rate as everybody else after they've been here for a generation or two and are eating pizza and drinking milkshakes and eating cheeseburgers. So it isn't the genetics, it's the environment, and especially the diet and the environment.
So if that's the case, can someone alter their risk? In other words, say if they're in the U.S. or some industrialized country, can they reduce their risk of cancer by changing their environment and perhaps diet as well?
Right. The diet is the key, because our bodies have an internal environment, and we take chemicals from the outside. You think about eating higher on the food chain when you're eating dairy products and meat. So whatever pollutants are in the environment, they get concentrated several hundredfold in the animal products. And that's how you can moderate the effect of your environment on yourself, by changing what you take into your body. So it's not just the air we're breathing in, but the water we're drinking, but especially the food that we're consuming. And animal products are just so such a high risk for all of these diseases that are killing Americans, right through to kidney disease, osteoporosis, diabetes. And if we can reduce our risk of those diseases, think of how much money we can save on healthcare costs, as well as how we're going to help the pollution problem, because the livestock industry is responsible for over half the pollution, especially of the waterways in this country. If we reduce our intake of animal products, then the waters can start to recharge themselves, and we can have cleaner water as well. So it's this vicious cycle that's perpetuated by the livestock industry that wants us to believe we need these things, and instead it's what's causing the problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question for you. A lot of times we hear in the news and maybe even discussion, but we're told about like health and health care, but it always points to like insurance coverage and stuff like that. You know, whether it's company sponsored insurance, health insurance at someone's workplace, or whether they fund it privately, or whether a government is a part sponsor or universal health care. But what do you say about someone being responsible for their own health and their chances of getting various diseases? Should that be in front of like the health care of the insurance part, where they cover like the medical costs? But
right, well, it certainly would reduce the burden on the healthcare industry if they didn't have to take care of people that weren't taking care of themselves. There are insurance companies in this country that will charge lower rates if you're a non-smoker. There are actually insurance companies in England that will charge you a lower rate if you're a vegetarian, because they know your chances of needing health services are much less. And we need to do that in this country, but people are afraid to do that because it gets industry upset. You get the dairy industry, the meat industry, they're very closely allied with the pharmaceutical industry, because more than half the antibiotics in this country are used for livestock feed. So the pharmaceutical industry wants to keep people eating a lot of these animal products, so they can keep selling that to the industry. And they also don't mind it when people get sick, because that makes them profitable also. So we need to get the separation between the insurance companies and the other big corporations. You know, in this country, the biggest industry in this country is the oil industry. The number two industry in this country is the cancer industry. And people make more money treating cancer and trying to detect it and so on. But a very, very tiny amount of that money is used trying to prevent it. And a lot of it could be prevented, and then a lot of the other services are going to have to be cut down when the cancer rate goes down. So you're not finding this big push to try to prevent things mm-hmm. anymore.
And is that cancer industry, does that cover like various fields like hospitals and also the pharmaceutical industry?
Right. Hospitals, pharmaceutical industry, the companies that manufacture the equipment to do screenings, to do the mammograms and the x-rays and so on. There's a tremendous amount of changeover that takes place, because they're always updating things, and all of that comes right out of our pockets, because that's what drives up the insurance rates.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you of what got you into this health and even diet, and I wanted to remind the listeners that I'm speaking with George Eisman, who will be at the upcoming VegFest 2006, subtitled a Compassionate Living Fair, and it'll be occurring at the First Unitarian Church at in the Portland one at Southwest 12th and Main. And this will be going from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And George will be speaking twice in town. And where did you get the, I guess, where you started studying on health and diet?
Well, it started back in the 1970s when I read a book called Diet for a Small Planet by a woman named Frances Moore LePay. And basically her idea was that we could have a lot more food to share with the hungry countries of the world if we ate lower on the food chain. It takes about 16 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of beef. So if we all just ate more grain and let the animals, you know, just eat the grass, which is what they're intended to eat. Animals really aren't meant to eat grain, and certainly not grain that we've grown for them, that we would have a lot more food to share with the rest of the world. So that's what got me started on thinking about eating less meat. And once I started eating less, I felt better, and I certainly didn't feel worse like people would have told me that, you know, you need to have meat to be healthy. And the more I studied, and the more I did that, people said, well, you ought to study nutrition in order to make sure you're not doing anything harmful to your body. And indeed, I found out I was actually helping my health by doing that. You know, I want to direct people to the website for the group that's sponsoring this fair is the Northwest Veg Group, and it's nwveg.org, nwveg, northwestveg.org. And there's going to be food demonstrations. There's going to be companies that make plant-based food, because what we're talking about here is a plant-based diet. And another one of the speakers at this event, I believe, is Howard Lyman, who is he's also called the Mad Cowboy. He was the one that exposed on the Oprah Winfrey Show the practice that we were feeding dead ground-up animals to our livestock, and that was what was causing this mad cow outbreak in England. And if it wasn't for him, and actually the cattle industry sued him and Oprah Winfrey for saying that, but that's what got them to stop feeding ground-up animals to animals. Otherwise, we'd still have this mad cow. Now we only have these old cows, like this 10-year-old cow, that are still have the remnants of this. But it's only because of vegetarian activists like him and people like Oprah Winfrey saying that's scary enough to make me not eat a hamburger again that these things come to light. So we can't depend on, like you say, the government or the food industry to protect our health when it comes to somebody's money being at stake, and in this case, the food industry.
Right. Howard Lyman, who was a cattle rancher in Montana, and I think he was the cattleman out of Texas and everywhere else, one of their worst nightmares, because this was a man who was a former owner of a huge dairy and livestock ranch in Montana, and he's been through it all, and he was hard to refute. But, once his appearance on Oprah, that was in about 10 years ago now, 1996, that really brought it out. And maybe their worst thing to do was to sue him, because that exposed it double.
Exactly. And so they probably won't do that again, but what they do is they fund a lot of research, so-called research, to try to show that there's no problem with these things. Just this morning I heard on NPR, of all places, that there's a study that just came out of Indiana showing that the chocolate milk is as good as Gatorade for replenishing what you need after an athletic event. Well, who do you think sponsored that study? Of course, the dairy industry did. Who's going to be sponsoring a study comparing chocolate milk to Gatorade except the dairy industry? And people, you know, they didn't compare chocolate milk to water. They compared it to these sweetened sports drinks that aren't really very good for you anyway. So, of course, it makes it look like there's something good about milk, when, in fact, there really isn't anything good or necessary about it. Sure, it's got some minerals, but all those minerals can be gotten from the same place that the cow got them from, which is from eating greens. If we just have three servings of greens every day, which is what the people in China are recommended to eat, it's what Atkins recommended for his diet, even though the rest of the diet wasn't very good. Three servings of greens every day meets our needs for calcium and these other minerals, and that's all we need to build our bones strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question for you. Knowing what you know about these items, what would you choose for a teenager if you have the choice and you couldn't choose water, but between soda and milk, what would you say is the least harmful of the two?
Well, that's, you know, it's a loaded question, because the problem with soda is they use a sweetener in sodas now called high fructose corn syrup, which actually stimulates your body's appetite. So here you're getting these calories. That's how the dairy industry got away a few months ago, or a couple of years ago now. They did a study showing that people lose weight especially kids, drinking milk. And they did that study by having some kids drink milk and some kids drink Coke. And the kids that drank Coke were hungrier throughout the day and ate more. So they said, see, the milk makes you lose weight. But if they were just given water, they would be fine. Or you could use diluted fruit juice. If you take some orange juice or apple juice or something and dilute it half and half with water, because just by itself it is extra sweet, and we don't need that much sugar in our diets, especially as adults. Now, for children, it's different. You know, children need, when they're small, they need more energy for the amount of food that they're eating. But as we get older, that's why there's fiber in food to help dilute the amount of calories we're getting in every mouthful. And, you know, the more undiluted juice you drink, that's also, you know, that can be a risk factor for gaining weight. For people that have a weight problem, one of the, besides cutting out animal products, one of the next things they need to do be cut out oils and fats, but also cut out sweets, including concentrated fruit juices. If they're diluted, it's much easier for the body to deal with. Mm-hmm. So, but as far as beverages, I mean, there's no other animal in the world that drinks anything except water. I mean, as infants, they drink their mother's milk, and then once they're weaned, they're eating food and drinking water. For some reason, we as human beings think we need some kind of beverage other than water. Now, I mean, I'll get arguments from people that want to drink beer and wine and things like that, but the truth of the matter is all we need to replenish our thirst mechanism is water, and anything else that we're drinking along with that, there's generally going to be a problem at some point if you overdo it. So that's why it's unfair to compare one beverage to another, because the truth of the matter is we're supposed to be drinking water to satisfy our thirst, and that's what does it the best. I mean, you eat a good diet, all the minerals and things that we need are in the food rather than in the liquid.
That's where it's at, right? That's right. Where the animals and some humans get their water from is from the foods, because right. The foods
right.
In their natural state would carry water.
Right.
And
fresh vegetables and fruits are 80 to 90% water. And our body is only 55% water. Mm-hmm. So they have more than enough to meet our needs. If you eat a diet based around fresh fruits and vegetables, you don't have much of a thirst because you're getting it all from water. It's when you start eating dried foods and things like meats and cheeses that have a high salt content, then we get thirsty. And the best way to counteract that is with water. But the better solution is to cut down on those kinds of foods and go back to the kinds of foods that, you know, we're intended to eat, which is mostly fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains and nuts and seeds that have been soaked and reconstituted to get their original water content back in them.
Mm-hmm. So have you taught nutrition in schools?
Yes, I taught at Florida State University in mm-hmm. the nutrition department, and then I ran a program at a community college in Miami where I focused on vegetarian nutrition, and now I do some part-time lecturing at Cornell University, which is where a professor, Colin Campbell, who's just written a book last year called The China Study, which is the largest epidemiological study ever done on human beings on their diet and disease. And he found, without question, that the more animal products people ate in different parts of China, the more disease they got, especially these cancers and heart disease and strokes, diabetes, osteoporosis, that he's really made a strong case for that. And he writes, as part of his book called The China Study, He talks about how the dairy industry, especially, and also the meat industry, every time he would publish a paper, they would get a team of so-called scientists together to try to refute what he was saying and cast doubt on it. And that's what they spend a lot of their advertising dollars on doing, is refuting these real scientific studies. And this is a man who's not any kind of ethical vegetarian. This is a man who's started out in animal science trying to figure out how to fatten up cattle. And he found that the more protein they ate, not only did they get fatter, but they also got more cancers. And so it led him to human nutrition, and now he's trying to get people to away from animal products, and especially dairy products, if we want to reduce our cancer rate in this country, mm-hmm. and it's skyrocketing.
Why? Was he the man who identified dioxin?
He was, right.
Okay.
He worked with dioxins, and he says point blank, he says that the protein in milk, it's called casein, is a stronger carcinogen than dioxins are. And he says we're going up the wrong path when we focus on these environmental pollutants and not look at our diet, because our diet is what protects us from these carcinogens. And even small amounts of them can be deadly if we're eating the wrong kind of
diet.
Okay,
but casein is the protein in milk, and most of the protein in milk is casein, is that?
A good part of the casein,
okay.
Only in cow's milk. There's no casein in human milk. There's none in goat's milk, but there is a lot in cow's milk. And but goat's milk also has growth factors. Is IGF-1 is insulin-like growth factor 1, and that's found in goat's milk also. So you don't really want to overdo any kind of milk from an animal. If you want to make a milk, you can make a milk from any plant food. You can make soy milk, almond milk, rice milk. oat milk. There's lots of plant milks out there, and you can make them yourself very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be talking about that on Saturday.
Right. And T. Colin Campbell, the author of the China Study, and, you know, I've been looking at some of the books, and his book, you know, is taking off in sales. It's surprising. It's one of the best-selling health books around, and, you know, it's one on nutrition studies, so that seems to be a very rare topic. But do you have a clue at who's buying it? Is it like scholars, or is it people wanting to look about nutrition? Because,
well,
you know, I don't see this in the news or anything.
No.
So I'm trying to figure out who's the audience of this book, and do you think it's passed around in the academic circles?
I think it is. I think there's a lot of interest in it in people that are trying to make people understand, you know, how deep this sort of cover-up goes in nutrition circles, because there's not a whole lot of push to have nutrition and diet be something that's going to prevent disease. It's more like, well, once you've got a disease, how can we support you through your chemotherapy, through your radiation therapy? Nobody really wants to talk about how we can stop you from getting these diseases in the first place. And you have to understand that cancer is a disease that takes years to develop. And so by the time they find one tumor, you might have several other tumors in your body that are just starting to grow. And if you don't change your diet, those are going to grow and they're going to kill you also. So you can't just treat the one tumor unless you're treating the diet, unless you're changing your diet. So.
Okay, right. Well, we're about to close out here, and I've been speaking with George Eisman, a registered dietitian, and he'll be speaking twice in town, and I think your next one is going to be at the Veg Fest coming this Saturday at the First Unitarian Church. That's the Portland one at Southwest 12th Avenue and Main Street, pretty close to the freeway. And George will be talking, let's see if I have the time here, at 4:30. And his first lecture is going to be, Can Milk Cause Breast and Prostate Cancer? And he'll be among several other speakers. Bo Rinaldi will be a restaurateur, is also a scheduled speaker, as well as the Mad Cowboy, Howard Lyman. And also Kendra Kimbrauskas of, she'll be talking about farms and local small farms, which would be a very interesting subject. And all this, the admission charge looks like it's $5 for the whole day. And this, again, is coming up in 3 days on the 18th. And George, what is your next talk going to be? Is that going to be the day after?
Yes, actually, I'm speaking twice at the Veg Fest, once at 10:30 in the morning about the health benefits of a meatless diet, and then that cancer talk at 4:30. So I invite people to come all day. It's a wonderful day of programs. And then on Sunday, March 19th, I'm speaking at 5 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting Hall on 4312 Southeast Stark Street. The vegetarian group has their monthly meeting there at 5 p.m. on Sunday. And then on Monday night, I'm going to be speaking down at the University of Oregon in Eugene. So I'm really glad to be out here, and I really appreciate your having me.
Okay, well, it's very interesting to have you back. I think you spoke at the Friends Meeting House before, so I think that would be an interesting return. And I believe that's a free event. It might be a potluck. I would contact Northwest Veg on that. Again, their website address is nweveg.org. And again, wanted to thank you on that. And again, this is Mal Resler on this Wednesday Radio Zine. And I'll take it back to you at the control room there. So thank you.
And thank you very much, Mel and George, for a very interesting program.